Welcome to our Three's Dumbest Typist Talk. I had hoped this wouldn't be the first time Typist was addressed here, because Typist is awesome, and I pronounced it wrong, it's Typist. Sorry for that. I want to talk today about architecting Typist templates, specifically packages. I said packages here. A package in Typist is essentially a package like in every other programming language. The thing with Typist is that it's very convoluted to work with templating. And I want to talk about how to improve the workflow of templating based on a blog post I wrote, which I didn't link, which is fine. If you want these slides, they are probably going to be available somewhere, someone, maybe. I'm not going to go through the contents because everyone is bored if I do that. Let's talk about what Typist is, and I will demonstrate it based on the wonderful slides I made. So these slides are made in Typist. Typist is a markup language and a programming language in one, which is really convoluted, but it's better than LaTeX. So it's a low bar to. Like, you know.
Shots fired.
Yes. I've been working in LaTeX for the past, 7 years, and I did not enjoy any of it, and now I'm switching to Typist, so everyone is happier, except, LaTeX people, which I don't care about. Thing with Typist is that it's a combined programming language and a markup language. So instead of defining a heading with a command, you have an equal sign, and I'm going to zoom in a little bit so people can actually see it. You have an equal sign for a heading and two equal signs for two headings. It's very similar to Markdown in a way, but it's different to Markdown, which is really annoying because then you have to convert Markdown to Typist. With Pandoc, which supports Typist. The basic idea is that you can combine the programming aspect, the layout aspect, and the markup aspect of a language in one. And the interesting part for today is packages. So there is a preview repository currently with packages on it. For example, Diatypist. Which is the library I use for my presentations. And you just import slides, you show them with a command, you enable the sliding, and you get a slide. And now we'll look at why Typist templates are often convoluted and hard to use, which is the problem. I call it architectural collapse, which is not a term anyone else uses ever. It's normally architectural drift or technical debt. But at the point where you're working with a template or a package that is so gigantic that it's drifting in architecture, it's already collapsed. So I prefer that. It's just better branding. The thing you see with a lot of Typist templates is that there's a lot of exports. So Concord, for example, is a Typist package that allows you to make corded lyrics. So put the chords above the lyrics so the guitar players can play it. And it has a lot of exports that no one uses. Like, why is there a draw package? The draw package is just an built-in package. Why is Concord exporting that? And the alternative often is to make one gigantic lib.tip. This is the lib.tip of ILM. A template. Hi. And it has 425 lines of code, which is just completely unreadable. And when you're navigating through it, you have nested helper functions in helper functions. And it's gigantic, and it's not maintainable. And that's what I call architectural collapse. And as with all technical debt, as with all technical debt, you It's slowly and quietly builds up over time, and it turns into an unmaintainable code relatively quickly. Yeah, all others call it architectural drift or technical debt. It's the same problem, but worse branding. And the thing to keep in mind with typist documents, typist templates, typist packages, is they're not documents in the conventional sense. They're really software, and most people forget that they have to treat their packages, their templates, like software, like living systems, which need layered architecture and guidance, I guess. So the first step in building software is always to define your packages or your software's goals. And that is often skipped in typed templates. So we'll look at a case study. I made a case study with, I want to just place a address block somewhere. In this case, it's a name, address line, postleitzahl, so zip code, city, country, and then a UID, it's the Umsatzsteuer ID. And the thing is, this is a starting off point. So this is something you'd write in the document to just get a basic address block. But normally documents or letters have two address blocks, one for the sender and one for the recipient. So you do the same thing again for the recipient. And the question now arises, why am I doing it twice if I could just make one function that does it? So before you write a function, you obviously have to do requirement engineering. You have to decide early what the package should do. So should it display the address block based on a position given by the user, or should it be smart about it? Should there be rigid field structures? In this case, I said don't. Even though my example later does show it, I'm really bad at presentations. There's a lot of things you can do in the scope of your architecture, and you have to define that first. Otherwise, you're going to get something really chaotic. And the thing with types is that it often has either very complicated templates or very dumbed down. So I decided on an architecture template or an architecture with API layers. There's in my idea, there's three API layers. There's the one-stop shop, which shares its name with open source software, which was not intended, which does everything magically and has same defaults. It's very opinionated, and it really decides for you instead of letting you decide, which is good in some cases, because if I just want to place my address block in the right position for a C5 letter, I'm not going to want to think about where that exactly is. I want to just say, this is my letter size, give me an address block. If that doesn't work because your window for your address block is in some weird position, you want to be configurable. You want to be able to move the items, configure the fonts. You want to enable the envelope sizes, like there's B4 and C4, which is either half folded or triple folded, double folded. And you want to configure where the windows are. And then there should be a power user option, which I call DIY. So do it yourself really should enable you to change everything in the templates or the packages in a structure without really breaking it too much. But it is a full trust system. So you enable the user to do everything, but the user can't go complain to you. And if you implement all three of these layers the users will be happy, because there's power users, there's the somewhat configurable option, and there's just one stop shop where I get my thing and I'm happy. The idea of the one stop shop layer is relatively simple. When you design your function, you start with that, the opinionated entry point, which just gives you a recipient and a sender, which are both optional, and gives you the content. So you set a content, you write your content into the function, and the function has to figure out everything, like placement and fonts. This should be your README's first example. So it should be a one-liner, you just throw it in and it works. The configurable layer just extends the function with structure and flexibility. So you get, instead of just a content, you get to set the name, the address line, the zip code, the city, the country, additional lines. And it should be smart about them, but still leave you configurability. So in this case, we still leave content to be a valid option. And you have to implement that that switch between content and a larger function component or a large dictionary. And you have to decide what the additional lines, for example, could be. In this case, they're content, content array, or none. And you have to build switches into your function to handle that. That is the configurability layer. And as you can see, it's cut off because the parameters take up two slides, because it's just so gigantic. There's envelope size as well. The return address, whether it should render, like some letters have a small return address above the recipient line, whether it should render that. And for that, it obviously requires you to set these values correctly. And your function has to assert that the user uses it correctly and throw an error. Or you can just set it, the return address, to a content. The thing is that all of these are switches in your function. And we'll get later to how you can actually work with larger components, because if you write all of this in a single function, it's going to be a mess. And it's going to be like 1,000 lines. And you don't want that, because it's not readable. And then we have the DIY layer, which just allows you to set an address block. So you expose a function called address block, which renders the address block correctly, but not in a position. You're not being held to walk across the street. You're given a zebra crossing. It's the basic idea. The implementation is obviously left as an exercise to the reader. I didn't care to do that. Now, as you can see, we have something very gigantic now. We have feature explosion. We have a lot of code. We have a lot of helper functions that suddenly appear in your export, because everything, every function and every object or variable you define in Typist is automatically exported from your file. So if you want to write one single lib.tip, which is the entry point, you're gonna be in a spot where everything is just chaos with one giant file. So multi-file also exists. You can import from other files in your package, but that also just exposes everything you exported in your temp or in your multi-file helper functions. And the big question you have to pose is whether your package should do all of it. If the answer is no, I'm happy for you to make simple templates, and see ya. Anyways, if you're like me, you're your idea is, of course, it should be universally perfect and awesome, which is always the point where everyone dies and is unhappy. But that is fine. That is why we need architecture. And that is why we need the three layers of complexity. So the thing with types is that in the end, you get one file that exposes everything. And you have to separate the internal structure from the public structure very carefully. And you do this by defining your API layers. So the public API, what your user sees, is the OSS layer, the one-stop shop layer. Then there should be a configurable surface between the public and internal API. There should be a way for you to call the internal API without exposing it to the user, but still leaving it configurable for the user. The hidden public API is the DIY layer. So power users only, it should be documented, but I know that most people don't. But it's still a public API in a sense. So you still expose it to the user by putting it in a lib.tip. Then there's the internal API, foundational logic, which the user shouldn't use. For example, formatting functions for your address block. And then there's primitive, like layouts and states, which should never be directly accessible. So states in Typist are the thing you use when you want to remember something across files, which is always a pain. And they should never be directly accessible, but always abstracted from the user. Otherwise, the user is going to set some object in a state that expects a string. The core idea is that every package should be a library that can be used, but not internally manipulated. That's why we have to separate the public API on the left from the internal API on the right. Now, if you have a lib.tip, everything this is the one entry point of your package. Everything you import in your lib.tip is also exported from your package, which is a default export Typist has decided on and is still fighting with users whether they like it. If you want to have drama, go to the Discord and say, my package exports everything, how do I change that? And then there's 20 people giving you 40 solutions. It's awesome, and that's why I wrote the blog post, that's why I want to do this talk. Because everything you import, as I said, everything you input in your lib.tip gets exported from your package. And that means you can't import helpers, because if you import a helper function from your internal API, it is automatically exported to the user. So saying hashtag import helpers.tip colon star will just export everything as we saw in the Concord example. So everything is re-exported. So the thing you have to do is import only the functions that you need in your lib.tip. So suddenly you've got a folder layout, a multi-file folder layout, where there's layouts that export one function from your lib.tip. And they can have multiple internal helper functions that help you but aren't exported from your lib.tip. And that is why, and this is like the thing everyone finds funny about when I talk about types, if you write code in lib.tip, you're doing it wrong. They're like dragons of dependency hell. As soon as there's code in your lib.tip, there's just chaos and no one knows what to do. Lib.tip is the definition of the public interfaces, not somewhere to put code. it does not contain public interfaces, because as soon as it contains the public interfaces, you want to write help functions next to the public interfaces, and then suddenly everything is exported again. So, there's an internal versus public export versus not exported rendering policy, which you say you export the address blocks, which takes a content or a dictionary or none, and internally you render the address block with only the dictionary, or you render line arrays, or you render a return address. You have multiple render functions that are internal that are not visible to the user because only the address block function is imported. If the users see both, they will be confused because there's no real semantic difference between address block and render address block. So your boundary has to be in your function as far as possible in your package. So file architecture is probably the most interesting part because everyone does it differently. I sketched out the tfsend layout. So every package I do is prefixed with tf. So I've got tf letter and tfcast for lcast. So if someone doesn't know Star Trek, lcast is the computer thing. So I've got tfcast and I've got tflead for Liederbücher, songbooks. And tfsend could be the address block component, which has components and a core and a layout folder, which each have different functions, which may be exported or imported in the libtotip, and to be a package, it has to have a type is the toml. So the real thing you have to consider is, where are your helpers? For example, the helpers to place your letter box could be in any position really, or in any, I'm really late, oh god, could be in any folder, but the important thing is that the lib.tip only imports the important functions. So lib.tip only imports the letter.tip letter function, and the i18n.tip languages, so the languages that are available. And when you're doing a letterbox, you obviously have to consider that different countries have different ways of putting your letters. Like Japan has a really weird way. I go into depth on that in the article. But the thing is, you have your OSS and con layers in your libtotip, and then the DOI layer, right? So the place for letters is exported and used internally by letter.tip, which is the function that decides where to place the letterbox when you just say, this is a C5 envelope, please export me that. The DOI layer is also an abstraction, so it abstracts away the internals for your OSS layer, and the OSS and con layers should use your abstractions from the DOI layer, so you get consistent results. In a way, you shouldn't call your internal API from your one-stop-shop layer, because that's just convoluting the internals, or mixing the internals with a abstraction layer. So there's multiple layers of abstraction, and you only expose like two of them. Maintenance-wise, how to prevent architectural collapse? The thing most people forget when writing a package for typed is that it's software and has to be treated as that. And when maintaining software, the biggest hurdle is thinking, I'll just fix that real quickly. And it's really not a quick fix when you find a bug. It's understanding why it is a bug, finding the source, and architecting a sustainable solution and not a patch. Just like with software, when you're writing anything other than like a shell script, you have to think about how to fix the bug at its root and how to prevent the bug from appearing somewhere else. So for example, if the bug exists in OS in the one-stop shop layer, it likely exists in your DIY path too. So you have to fix it once, at the right abstraction layer. So that is why you do the different abstraction layers. That's why you call your DIY layer in your OSS layer. Yes?
Quick question. Since you mentioned, it just fixes bug really quickly versus actually fixing it in the right place and making sure it doesn't reoccur, is there like any somewhat accepted way of testing types libraries?
Testing types libraries is a thing that is still being figured out. So no. I normally have a tester type in my root folder, which is in gitignore, and test that. And I do have examples. So I write a folder with examples that the user can look at that I do compile every time, but I haven't done really a test infrastructure. I've only done infrastructure for generating images for covers. So no, there's no real one-stop or one solution for testing types. I would suggest just trying it. It's a pain at the moment. The thing with adding new features. So I talked about adding a language switch, and the feature request, for example, could be that the user from the UK wants different zip code formatting. So the UK places its zip codes after the city, if I remember correctly, and we place it before the city in Austria. So there could be a toggle that just says switch reverse the order of the zip code and city, but obviously that is bad architecture. Because when a Japan user comes, it breaks. So the real solution is to add a layer of abstraction again. Add a translation layer, which does change the architecture majorly. Okay. That's fine. It does change the architecture majorly, but in the end, it saves you the pain of doing everything three times. And it does scale to any locale. So if someone just wants to add the a locale for China, they can change it in I18N and use it with a parameter instead of having to add code everywhere. The thing I want to say is that you shouldn't lock in your architecture. The architecture is an evolving being in your code base, and locking it in and only caring about one architecture or only implementing one architecture is always a way to lose sight of what you're actually doing, which is writing a sustainable infrastructure. Documentation. I know everyone loves that. I'm sure everyone wrote their types packages with documentation in mind, and I totally have everything documented in every template. Trust me on that, and don't look it up, please. Documentation shouldn't be an afterthought. It's part of the architecture. It's the bridge between your abstraction layer or abstraction layers and your users. And the structure of your documentation should mirror your layers. So in your README, you start by saying, this is how you just get started. Give the user a little treat so they are happy to use a package. And then the user realizes, I can't do the thing I wanted. So you then give a full parameter reference. The user scrolls down and sees, oh, that's how I do this. And then the power users come along and scroll all the way to the bottom and break your package, and you ignore the Git pull requests. Or the Git issues. The pull requests are fine. So the thing is that users are surprisingly good at the following documentation if it's well written. And if you separate your documentation into the layers of concerns, you get good documentation that the users can follow and aren't confused by constantly. Final thoughts. The thing I iterated like 50 times today is that you're building software when you're writing a package. And building software means that you have to architect it. Not architecting your software would mean architectural collapse, because there's no architecture. There's a lot of parts, and I think I copied that verbatim from the blog post. It may not have been fun writing a well-architected piece of software. It may have been fun, but the real thing with architecting a software is that it's not the most fun way to finish a project, but the best way to keep the project in line with your ideals and keeping it working how you imagined it to work. And the final ask the software has from you is that you keep it well architected. So the next aspirational maintainer will understand not only what you did, but why you did it. So, last sentences, which I'll read from the slides because it's, your template can now live freely, not only now live freely, but breathe. It lives in its own space, its own typist universe. And yeah, that's it. Thank you. Bye.